The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, discuss what's happening around the world, how to be better people, what we can learn from other people, other professionals, other areas, just to be better people, to influence ourselves, our families, our communities, just to go on the path we need to go. Today is the International Day of Remembering the tribute to victims of terrorism, which is a big day to remember. And for that, I think that the one person I've met that knows more than anybody the understanding and can, I love how you're saying more than anybody, but yeah, he's also humble. We'll get to him in a moment, about terrorism and the influences and where it comes through is a clinical social worker, Tuli Flint. Tuli has been here before on the show quite some time ago. We spoke about his resilience program. However, today we're going to talk more from the aspect of terrorism. Tuli is the only social worker I know who has worked in Israel, I'd say, in both sides of the border and knows people from both sides. And we can discuss deeper the context of terrorism and remembering today, especially that it is the International Day of Remembering victims of terrorism. However, today we have more in Israel, victims of terrorism, a very heartbreaking situation, people losing their lives. I'm going to try to hold myself back from commenting about the political speech last night that we heard from the president about that context as well, but we'll leave that for a moment. I'm going to get straight into the interview. I'm here with Tuli, just a short break, and we will start.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Rabbi G. We are back here on the International Day of Remembrance and Tribute to Victims of Terrorism. And I can't think of anybody better to speak to on this day. I'm here with Tuli Flint, who is a clinical social worker and PhD in criminology and works with couples and family as a therapist, however, is well aware of terrorism, loss, resilience, and as I said, when we talk about Israel on both sides of the border. Good afternoon, Tuli. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me for this, you know, particular day. And I think that, you know, the best would be to start off with questions that you have, but basically, I think what we need to remember is that terrorism is exactly how it sounds like, to inflict terror. The aim of terrorism is to inflict terror, and as parents, as therapists, as people, our aim should be to help our kids or our neighbors or our clients or our friends to know that they have means and tools and community to work with the terror that is inflicted on them. Not the act, but the sensation, the emotions, because, you know, we just
being terrorized.
We're being terrorized. We're being terrorized. And I think that, as you said, from both sides, if we speak about Israel, the particular side, you know, the case of Israel, you know, I would guess that if we go to South Africa, both sides of every community that is in conflict with the other community would feel that the other community is terrorizing them. So right. The tools that we give people are the same.
Okay, so let's dive into this discussion, and it's going to be a fascinating discussion I think we need to have. And I'll just say that, you know, you do live in Israel and you experience this terrorism on an ongoing basis. And, you know, as we said just today, another young woman was just shot and killed for no reason besides for harming and terrorism. However, we're now in South Africa and we're talking here on the radio in South Africa, which is an angle of people that were not necessarily experiencing what's happening in Israel. However, our hearts are there, and as Jews, we are connected to the nation and we do feel the terror. I mean, a lot of us have family there and connections. So we're connected, but distance. So it's a bit of a different angle of discussion. How do we explain in a healthy way to our children what is terror? What is going on? What is happening? Why are our people being targeted? What's just a bit about the understanding and connecting without traumatizing?
Mm-hmm. I think that we first need to acknowledge whenever we speak with our kids or with teenagers, always our neighbors or anyone, we first need to acknowledge the emotional level. It is frightening. You know, the first thing, many people try to avoid saying that, try to, you know, avoid acknowledging the fact that it is frightening to know that there are some people that might do horrible acts, regardless of what their opinion is. And it is frightening to live in a situation that our loved ones are endangered by that. And as human beings, we need to know that our fears and concerns are acknowledged.
Is there any role that we have as people that are living in countries that are not going through the intense terrorism that other countries are going through? So in a way, we kind of, you know, distance from it and living a bit more comfortably. At the same time, what can we do? I mean, there's not a lot we can do, but we also don't want to ignore the situation.
Although I've been to South Africa many times, so you know how it is, how it feels to be terrorized, although it's not on a political level. You know, the carjacking, the hijacking.
It's on a criminal level. Agreed.
On a criminal level and on a racist level. The, you know, being attacked on the mere fact that you're white when you go through, you know, people of color neighborhood and otherwise. So you know how it is to fear. That's one thing. So it's not so different in that sense. I mean, in Israel, it's based on religious and and politics, but it's not so different.
As you're saying that, Tuli, I have to say it's a very interesting concept, because while you're saying that, I'm thinking to myself, if I would get a phone call from a friend in a different country, and he would say, you know, I hear about what you guys are going through and worried. What would you like me to do about it? What would you like me to tell my kids? I don't think I would know the answer.
So I do have an answer, because basically, you know, it's two different questions. First, I think as human beings, and especially as Jews, I would like us to work towards having peace and harmony around the world without, you know, disregarding the political issues and the issues of territories and things like that. We want every human being, and this is also something that we say to our kids, although it is frightening, we want every human being to have, you know, ish tachat gafno and tachat enato. We want every human being to be able to live in serenity, peace and quiet. Nevertheless, we have conflicts. So we do explain that. But what would I want my friend from another country to tell me? First of all, I want to know that they think about me. That they know that that I should know that even though I'm not going to, I don't need them in the materialistic sense of knowing that they are there, but I know that they are there with me in their heart. There are many cases when we are powerless to change the situation, but we are not helpless because people think about us, know about us, and care about us.
I think it's a fascinating concept, what you're saying, and just the fact that they would call and ask. We do need to take a short break, but I do want to discuss with you what you said about powerlessness and helplessness. I think that is a huge point that we need to explore from your program a bit more. So we will just come with an announcement, and we will continue this discussion regarding the powerless and helplessness.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Rabbi G. We are back. I'm here in the middle of a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Tuli Flint, who is a social worker who has his PhD in criminology. And we are talking about terrorism, as Tuli's working in Israel on both sides of the conflict and is quite aware of the terrorism. And right before the break, Tuli, you mentioned about the difference between helplessness and, powerless. And I think it's a huge topic we need to touch on. Anything in the meantime you'd like to comment? You'd like to say something? You'd like to, you know, unfortunately, and we have lost in the Jewish community here in South Africa quite a few people to terrorism in Israel. And if there's anything you want to comment, you want to say, you want to add, share, or even question, ask any question to me or to Tuli, 34519 is the SMS line. You could also send Telegram at 061-895-1019, or you know what, even call 01-0140-3020. Okay, so Tuli, a bit about the differences between the two.
So the difference is, like, first of all, there's like a confusion between the two concepts, and it comes from like people use it without understanding that powerlessness is when I'm not able to do anything for myself. I'm not able to improve my situation by myself, which is, I think, the existential situation of every human being everywhere. Helplessness is the sensation, the wrong sensation, that I'm neglected, abandoned, deserted by everybody, including the sublime, including God. So basically, powerlessness, we are always powerless. We are always powerless. We need to acknowledge that we are powerless to control the things around us. I can, you know, and terrorism reminds us that we can drive down the road knowing that we are safe, and suddenly there's a terror attack. We can go to the restaurant and there's a terror attack. I mean, 600 meters from my clinic in Tel Aviv, there were two terror attacks in the last year that people lost their lives. So terrorism reminds us that we are powerless to control everything around us, but we are not helpless. Helpless is when we feel that no one cares, no one knows how to help us, and no one cares. I've been working in the oncologic department for 5 years. There are many situations where I cannot improve the other person's situation, but I can be with them. And many times this is something that is very important for us. And that's what we can tell our kids. We cannot assure you that nothing will happen. That would be a lie. But we can assure that we'll do everything, that we will be with you if something is happening.
Which is exactly the way to fight terrorism, basically what you say, is to show the people that are being terrorized that they're not helpless, because when somebody is helpless, then they feel terrorized. And the whole concept of terrorism is making a person to feel helpless. And by reaching out and connecting, we can change that. And that is, in a way, our responsibility. And which is, you know, it's fascinating, because it seems that sometimes we want to reach out and we don't, because we feel powerless and helpless. But if we are able to, by just reaching out and connecting with other people, then they will get that sense that somebody cares.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I don't think people understand how important it is that, you know, you get a message, and in my case, it's very weird from time to time, because here I am, a Jewish in Israel, and there's a terror attack in Tel Aviv, and I get a message from a Palestinian friend in Hebron saying to me, I'm sorry to hear that there's a terror attack I was thinking about here and I was worried. And the same goes the other way around. So when you get a message across two borders, not only the border of an ocean away, but also a border of political conflicts, and you get to be reminded that human beings are human beings, and when you are in friendship with each other, then although you're afraid, your heart fills with joy, because basically someone is there that cares for you, even though they can do nothing to prevent the situation.
I mean, why is it, where are we going wrong that this is a sensation? Meaning, you described a very fearful situation that's in the area of your office. In the past year, there was twice terrorist attacks that people lost their lives. You didn't need to, and I'm sure you've got messages from Israeli friends as well that cared, but you didn't need to mention that because it's clear. However, for you to mention that you got a message from a Palestinian friend, and that's a bigger issue. And my question is, why is that a surprise for us? Where are we going wrong as people that the politics are dividing us so strongly?
You got the answer. You know, politics, once you put politics into relationships.
Why are we allowing that?
That's a very big question. That's a very big question. I think that today in Israel, without referring to the political aspect, the polarization between the two camps in Israel is creating so much terror in both sides. Both sides are terrorized now by, you know, each side believes that the other side does not regard them as human beings. And, you know, I think that because both sides, when the conflict is so polarized, because both sides are acting as if the other side is non-human, then when you get someone from across the border that acknowledges the fact that you are a human being and you have emotions and feelings and sensations and loved ones and that they care for you, then it's even more than the regular, you know, concern of friends that live near next to you. So, and that's why when you guys from South Africa call on your friends in Israel and talk to them and tell, we're worried for you, we care for you, this is more important. And I think if we go back to what people can do to help their kids is something like, it is very fearful, it is very frightening, everyone is scared, and yet we are here for each other, and let's call our aunt in Tel Aviv, or let's call our friends in Jerusalem, because just like, you know, when I say to people, I'm going to South Africa, they would say, oh, take care. The streets are so dangerous. You cannot go out and, you know, being in Joburg for so many times, I know where to go and the feeling is not so scary. And that's what you hear from people that are even in the most endangered places in Israel. They would say, we run regular lives on the top of the volcano. That's all right. Thank you for asking, but we have our lives. So basically, we have this tendency of not knowing about ourselves and caring for others. And I think that there is something to do. We can always do something to, you know, to share our compassion and our care for others. And when we do something, we are less scared.
So
we are less afraid.
What's fascinating to me is you're describing a very unnatural situation, meaning if we take the country of Israel, that there's, from what I remember correctly, close to 9-10 million people living there already, a bit over 9 million. And the whole size of the country is not big. When we talk about South African standards, probably is the size of Kruger or something.
Israel fits into Kruger.
Fits into Kruger very easily. Okay. So then, and from my connections to people there, I know that I don't think there's one person in that country who doesn't have a personal friend that mm-hmm. in the elections will vote exactly opposite to him and yeah. on a very close friendship basis. So how are we getting to a point that it's not the unknown like you're describing Israel, South Africa. It's the very known. People know their friends. They know who they went to school with. They know who they work with. They know the people that are voting on the other side. And still, we're able to get to this division in a situation that people actually know each other on a personal level. And we're obviously doing something very wrong. And my question to you is, what do we need to teach our kids today that not to be carried away by the political speeches or conflict or whatever it is, and just say, open your eyes, listen to your senses. This is a person you know since you're a child. Why are you feeling so distanced?
I think that we are missing on our spiritual teaching. I think that I'm not saying that because you are a rabbi or this is a Kol Chai or whatever. I'm saying that because my PhD is about the spiritual component of recovering from PTSD. And what we've discovered is that basically you can bring with psychology, physiology, medicine, we can bring people to a functioning level. If we want them to get really better, we need to jump, you know, have that what they in the Christian world they call the leap of faith. We need to believe and we need to come back to our spiritual teachings. And you know, even if you open the Bible or any other Jewish teaching, we need to remind ourselves that although we disagree, we're still human beings, and that this is the materialistic world and we do what we can, but we are so I would say restricted in what we see about the universe, and that from a sublime point of view, all our fights and conflicts and beliefs seem so, I would even say, simple or ridiculous. Because, you know, when we remember, I'll tell you a story. I was attacked by a policeman in a demonstration, doesn't matter where, and he was attacked me very brutally with his rifle. I was bleeding. We went to the police. I filed a complaint. 4 years passed by and we meet on a conflict. And I look at him and I remember that 4 years have gone by. And, you know, I give my testimony and then he starts giving his testimony. And like I expected, he started lying. And then I said, stop. You're lying. All of us here know that. But you should know that I understand your situation. You were in a demonstration between demonstration from the right wing and demonstrators from the left wing and Palestinians, and you were stuck in the middle as a policeman, and I could see that you don't have any other, that you think that you don't have any other option but to be violent, and I was there. So I understand your situation, and I'm here not in order to punish you, but I want to know that you take responsibility. You know what happened? He started crying. This huge man that attacked me started crying in that investigation room. And he started telling me about his dreams, nightmares from the demonstrations, because I could see that he does not see me as a human being. So the first thing in spiritual teaching is, you know, we're all human beings. And the beginning is to acknowledge that.
You're speaking about the spiritual part of to acknowledge all human beings. And I'm 100% on the same page with you. I think what you're saying is completely accurate. And however, I do see that that's when we talk about people that we don't know and we haven't met before. And it's another person that we're from the same nation and we don't see each other as that way. Mm-hmm. However, my question is to people that do know each other and people that, you know, and in Israel, the going to the army is compulsory. Every unit has a mixture of cultures and you get friends with people from all areas of life. How do we not see and not trust our senses enough to know that what we're told is not true? Because I know my friends. I know the people that my neighbors. I know them.
I make it a point to remember that they're human beings, and maybe I am wrong. I have it engraved on my glasses. Maybe I am wrong, because I've been wrong before. And, you know, if everybody will remember that maybe I am wrong, maybe I'm not doing the right thing. And, you know, I ran marathons, and me and my daughter, we ran a semi-marathon. And at the end of that semi-marathon, I met some of my friends from the army that disagree with me on like an extreme level. And then we hugged. And while we were hugging, my friend was telling my daughter, "I love your father and I hate your father." At the same time.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, love, we can love and hate each other and still be friends.
And
I think that we need to go back to the French Revolution, where I think it was Rousseau who said, "I disagree with you. I totally disagree with you, but I would fight for your right to say what you think." I'm translating from French.
Yeah, even. But it's yeah, but it's definitely a need that we have to have. And saying that, part of being terrorized is a hard feeling that the terrorists the people being terrorized feel that they're not seen, not acknowledged, and questioned consistently.
Yeah.
How come on a level of explaining the situation and understanding, where is that getting lost? Where is it getting lost in the way that the consistently you'll find victims of terrorists believing that nobody sees their pain, nobody understands, and they're isolated?
I think there's a famous book by the psychiatrist, an amazing book that I recommend for everyone to read, on trauma and recovery by Judith Lewis Herrmann. She's a psychiatrist. She just published another book about spirituality, where she describes how after every terror attack, we empathize with people, we work with them, and then in the course of time, things, we go to the, you know, to the grocery, to the market, we have our kids, and we tend to forget. The problem is that the people around the people that were terrorized forget that the terror attack had happened, it took place, and they still remember. And that's why they feel neglected. That's why they feel neglected, and that's why, but it's so natural. I cannot have that in my mind all the time. So what we teach people is to ask for help. Ask for help. To tell people, "I feel that you don't remember me anymore." And then we'd be there for them.
So that's an amazing concept that we'll have to get to in a minute, which I do want to touch on, because, yeah, the reach out for help, and, you know, specifically today that we are in the international commemorate day of terrorism and victims, that I think that that's what we need to do as a society. Let's take a short break, and we'll continue exactly this topic thing.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back. We are here on the International Day of Remembrance and Tribute to Victims of Terrorism, and I'm here in a fascinating discussion with social worker, clinical social worker, Tuli Flint, who has his PhD in criminology and is very aware in this whole area of trauma. And right before the break, Tuli, you spoke about how to teach victims of terrorism to reach out for help when they feel forgotten and neglected. How do we do that? How do we encourage anybody, even if before they went through the trauma, that if something does happen, reach out for help?
I'm want to start with describing a research that was done in the United States. It's called the ACE studies, the Adverse Childhood Experience studies. And it's a huge study. They investigated about something like 60,000 people about childhood trauma and how do they affect the later life. And the amazing thing that they found out is that it doesn't matter what the trauma was, it matters whether or not there was someone next to that person that was traumatized or terrorized right after, whilst the trauma was, or a while after. So the question, if we have PTSD or not, is the question whether or not there was someone with us to help us. So, because we're interweaved. It's like the network or the network of human beings are is so important. So what I do with victims of terror, and in a minute I'll talk about the surroundings, I explain to them the harsh fact that people tend to forget. People tend to forget because they have their lives and they are not carrying their wounds, like physical wounds or psychological wounds in their body and mind, and that's why they forget. And people want to be helped without asking, and we need to struggle to tackle that, because that's a negative belief that prevents people from asking for help, from telling people, from you know, terror victims are ashamed, feel guilty.
It makes them feel like they're asking for charity.
Yeah, it's like, and we need to remind them that helping others is something that we like to do. You know, when you let me help you, I get something from that also. So I'm telling them, when you don't ask for help, you are depriving me of something that I can do for myself and you.
When and do they them, buy into that?
They buy into that, because when they ask for help, they see that they get. And the other thing is, we in Israel, many with terror victims, we make sure that for every terror victim that I take care, that I'm giving therapy, I make sure that they help someone else, another
Amazing.
Terror victim.
Amazing.
And they feel that they are, you know, their sense of efficacy is getting higher, because they feel that they are important to others, that they have something, that they have a meaning in life.
Something that's crossing my mind right now while we speak, and I was going to ask you about this, but I'm maybe going to change the angle of the question. But I want to share with you, and I know we're running out of time, I want to share with you regarding, I once got a phone call from somebody who suffered a huge trauma here, a criminal trauma here in South Africa. And he says, it was in the middle of the night, he says, I need to chat to you for a moment. And I said, come. And he came to me and he said, I just need to tell you that the next person who's going to call me to tell me that they know exactly what I'm going through because they went through it, their aunt went through it, their neighbor went through it, their uncle went through it. Or if I tell somebody the story and they'll tell me, oh, they know because it happened to them, I'm going to punch them. That was his words. He said, I cannot hear from one more person that they know exactly because they had it, or their cousin or their neighbor or their uncle. And my question to you is, how do we support without taking the spotlight away from the terrorists? Like to tell them, oh, could you know what happened to my friend in the terror? You know what happened to me? And actually allowing the person who's going through that to shine.
That's the difference between being empathic and sympathetic.
Okay.
And you know, basically when you sympathize with someone, you take their place. When you empathize with someone, you might say, oh, that must have been shocking. That must have been very terrifying. Without putting yourself there, without saying that must have been terrifying because I've been through this and that. I only say, when I think about what you went through, I'm shocked and I'm so sorry for you. And then, we're not taking the spotlight. I'm just talking about my feelings and sensation without, you know, without assuming that I know what they went through.
So my question to you, based on this story, would be when you encourage somebody who's gone through terror himself to reach out to another victim of terror and support them, would you say it would be healthier to have victims of trauma support each other that suffer different kinds of trauma? Perhaps somebody who went through a criminal trauma, somebody who went through terrorism of political or religious trauma, then the same exact...
I want to say that it's not a thumb rule. It's not something like that. Because basically there are people, you know, the soldiers that come to my clinic find it very helpful, the fact that to know that I was a combat fighter myself and I know how it is to be in battle. But I'm not saying to them, I'm not emphasizing that point. I'm not saying, oh, I know how it feels because I was in battle. And then they might be very jealous because how come you are good, you are better than me or you're worse than me?
However, you're a professional. So I'm wondering regarding a victim helping a victim, would it be better to come in from variety areas?
I'm not sure. It depends on every person. But I would say that the thing that I wouldn't want people to do is to say, I know what you went through, because I don't know. When I think about you, when I have you in my mind, I think I feel I'm sorry for you. I feel the sorrow. I'm emphasizing. I feel compassionate. I imagine that it was horrible. On a general basis, I try not to know things. I try more to hypothesize or...
My heart's with you. Not that I know what you went through, but my heart's with you.
My heart is with you. Do you need anything? How would you feel? How would you know that I'm with you? Or questions like that. And basically, I think that, you know, saying the simple thing, I want to help you. Can you tell me how? Amazing. I cannot undo the things that you went through, and I cannot undo the handicapsy or whatever you suffer from. I can be with you. Just tell me how to help you.
I'm here for you. So we do need to take our last break for the hour, and when we come back, we'll... And there's one more question I think we need to clarify, and then we'll start wrapping up the show. A short break, and we will be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Thor by G. We are back, and as we're ending the show, and I'm here with Tuli Flint, who is a clinical social worker who specializes with trauma and is very aware of the terrorist situation and met a lot of victims. Tuli, before we wrap up, I need to ask you like this. If I'm, you know, we spoke a lot about how to treat our people that went through trauma. What would you say would be a simple guideline for somebody that meets somebody who just went through trauma? So you're there in South Africa. Thank God we're not dealing with terrorism, but you were there a minute after a terrorist, a car accident, and you see somebody went through trauma, a criminal act. What is the first immediate response that we can or need to support?
You know, here in Israel, we have like videos that we distribute to everyone of what are the five basic things that you do, or the four basic things that you do if you meet someone right after trauma, the first thing would be, I am here with you. I'm not going to leave you until I make sure that you are safe and you feel better. Amazing. Even if you are not. The other thing is, do you need anything right now? Because basically, you know, do you want me to call anyone? Do you want me to do something? Or do you want me to give you water? The third thing is, everything that you feel, sense, emotionally, or think about is normal. You just, I'm saying to people, you have a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. It's a normal. You normalize everything. And if it's possible to just, give that person a hand and tell him, like literally touch the other person's hand. If it's not against, you're religious or you don't want to touch someone without their permission, just give them a hand and tell them, I'm here with you. Physically, I'm here with you, not hugging them without without permission.
Consent.
But I'm here with you. And the fourth thing is, let's do something for the benefits of others.
Okay.
I need you to. If it's just after a car accident, I need you to sit next to this person and to, I don't know, hold his hand.
Remove them and get them involved.
Get them involved. So first of all, I'm here with you. I'm not going to leave you until you feel better.
Okay. And secondly, number five, we just have to end we're really running out of time. What's number five?
Number five is making sure that I maintain connection afterwards. I'm taking your phone number and I'm maintaining connection afterwards. I will keep in touch.
Following up with that. Amazing. Tuli, thank you so much for being with us. We're going over time and getting the message. Thank you for your incredible work. It's amazing, and to see someone who's able to carry both sides of conflict and on this special day of remembering the victims of terrorism, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you, Tuli, for being with us today.
Thank you, Rabbi.
It's always a pleasure as usual. 101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. Another great show has come to an end, and we will be back next week, Monday 2 to 3. In the meantime, stay safe, stay tuned, and let's keep our minds and hearts with people that are suffering and need us. We're there for them. Don't hesitate to connect, and we will continue our journey together next week, Monday 2 to 3.